This fourth one, I'm only going to identify, it's a very difficult one. We can pursue it during the Q&A if you want to. But it goes by a different, couple of different names, discontinuity. I can accept something as being a saying of Jesus if I cannot track it to Jewish thought at that time, because maybe the gospel writers copied off Jewish writers. And number two, if I cannot track it to the church. So the things that are most trusted by skeptics are when the Jews didn't teach this and the Christians didn't teach this. If the Gospels have it, and the Jews didn't say it and the Christians didn't say it, probably Jesus said it. Now, I told you about the Son of Man a minute ago. 5 out of 5 sources say Jesus called himself the Son of Man. By discontinuity, Son of Man also ranks very highly. Because the Jewish writings at that time, 1st Enoch, 4th Ezra, books you probably perhaps not read of, or heard of or read, but Jewish writings from the first century, they have a Son of Man concept, and he's a lofty, divine, pre-existent figure, very lofty figure. But they would never say it was Jesus. They're not Christians. Oh, well, how do you know the Gospels didn't copy this from the early church? You know why? Jesus is never called the Son of Man a single time in any of the epistles. Never called the Son of Man. And yet, it's his favorite name for himself in the Gospels. So if you can't track it to Jewish writings, can't track it to Christian writings, Jesus probably said it. That's discontinuity. 5, Aramaic. If I can find sources, that have Aramaic substrata, I'm probably onto something. Good example, Jesus' famous mention of his father as Abba, an Aramaic term. Jesus probably spoke Aramaic, not Hebrew. And one of those terms, Abba, is a familiar term. It would be a name that a child. You know, were you ever around a great scholar, a major scholar, and have his son or daughter walk up to him or her and say, "Can we go get an ice cream? Will you play chess with me when we get home?" And you're going, "Well, hadn't thought about that." Well, this child has rights that you and I don't have, right? And so when Jesus says Abba, that makes people pay attention, and that's Aramaic substrata. Here's another one. Coherence. When I have a body of sayings that I think are Jesus's, and I have this other saying over here, which I'm trying to judge, if it coheres with, is very similar to what I've already accepted, then that one makes us look better. That's coherence. 2 more. Enemy attestation. If somebody who can't stand your guts says, "You are a loser, you cheat, you're not a good friend, you stink, everything else, but I'll give you one thing, you're a brave guy," chances are you're brave. That's enemy attestation. You've got one good characteristic and everything else, you're a loser. You probably have one good characteristic. And there are a number of things in the Gospels, this is a principle used in ancient history, there are a number of things that are attested by non-believers. For example, Jesus' miracles. That's a second way to go after the miracles. 8, the principle of embarrassment. When I don't say something, if I say something that's very embarrassing to me, either I just have a big mouth and I let it slip, or I probably have a good reason for telling you that. And sometimes in the Gospels, sometimes the disciples look very bad. They don't believe when Jesus talks to them. What about the fact that James, the brother of Jesus, was a skeptic? James, the pastor of the church of Jerusalem, who was known as a very, very holy man in the early church. How come Mark 3 says that when Jesus came to town, his brother James thought he was nuts? The Greek text says, James thought he was beside himself. Why do you say that about James, when by the time the New Testament was written, he was one of the most esteemed leaders? Because it's true. He didn't believe. So that's embarrassment. Okay, And what you do is you take things that are established from all these and you build building blocks from the ground up. And this is the way most people, this is the way most scholars do historical Jesus studies today. All right? I think either way can get you to the conclusion that the New Testament's reliable. You can either use the umbrella approach or you can use the building block approach. They both get you to the conclusion that the New Testament's reliable. Okay? Any questions or anything I can help you with? We don't care on time? Okay.
Okay, we're going to now move into a time of question and answer. You'll have about one question to ask and then a one follow-up question. And there's a mic here and one here, and we have a little bit of time to spend with this. So.
I know I said a lot of things. Don't be bashful. If I said something that's confusing, or if you said, hey, you didn't tell me how you get numbers out of this, or how numbers can prove a text. Yes, sir.
From your second method, what theology can you build from that? As far as, can you build all the basic theology of Christianity from all eight of those?
I believe so. Yeah, let me say a word about that, theology. I think sometimes Christians, I mean, any group, any political persuasion, I think there's a tendency to make a mistake because we think that the whole parameter of what Christians believe, if somebody questions something out here on the edge, we need to go after them and be real ferocious. How about denomination down the street from you? How about a church down the street, and they don't quite believe what you believe? Let's say they're Calvinistic and you're Arminian, or the other way around. Okay. Christians go after Christians. I think we should have a tiered theological system where the closer something is to the center, the better established it should be. And I think Christians, I think any religion, any political, any anything, should major on the major and minor on the minor, right? That's why I have a major and a minor in the university. You major on something, a minor on something else, and something else is even further down the path. If you do major only, those doctrines which the historic Christian Church, Greek Orthodox, Roman Catholic, Protestant, have called in the ecumenical creeds, have called the most important doctrines down through the centuries, yes. And the closer you get to the center, the bullseye, I think the center of the center in Christianity is what's called the gospel. The New Testament, over and over again, this is the single most important point. Jesus said the greatest command is to make sure your life is lined up with God. The second greatest command is to take care of others. Two greatest commands. And whenever the New Testament defines the gospel, three doctrines are always present. The deity of Christ, his death, his resurrection. You could easily get all three of these with the building block bottom-up method. And you can certainly get it easier from the umbrella method. I just think the umbrella method is not as tight an argument. I think it's a decent argument. It's not as tight an argument. But from the building block method, you can really go after these. And then, of course, for those of you who consider yourself Christians, the key, there's a fourth thing here. This is who Jesus is, what he did. When it's combined with faith, that is what Christians call salvation. So I think you can do all that with the building block approach. Yes, sir.
I noticed you have all those numbers. How does it come about when the more manuscripts you have, the more accurate it is?
Okay. Let me divide this room up and give you an illustration. Now, because you might be thinking, that's a real good question. You might be thinking, okay, on the surface, 5,800 manuscripts is better than 650, and 5,800 or 650 is better than 10. But how does you still have 200,000 variant readings. So how do you know which is the correct reading? All right. Let's say this room represents three major manuscript families. Now, here's how you get a manuscript family. Let's say there's a group of monasteries in this part of the world, and they copy manuscripts 24/7. And here's another early cell, and this one's in the Middle East, this one's in North Africa, and this one's in Rome. I'm just picking any old thing. And they copy like crazy, and they copy like crazy, and they copy like crazy. They have to, because we've got 5,800 manuscripts. And let's say, all right, so we have three manuscript families, and let's say here's the first manuscript family, here's the second manuscript family, and here's the third manuscript family. Let's say halfway through this family's history, right in there, somebody left a line out in the book of 1 Corinthians. They left a line out. But let's say because these manuscripts, these three guys are sitting here, let's say these manuscripts are right now, they are in better shape than these manuscripts with this family because they're newer and we're going to handle these things a lot. These are starting to get brittle. So people are going to start using their manuscripts. Let's say everybody after them leaves that sentence out. How do I know that that sentence should be there? Well, in the same family, up until that point, nobody left that sentence out. After you guys left the sentence out, there's a few people behind you who say, you know, I remember that sentence, I think, from heart. And they write it in from memory. And they leave two words out, but they have the rest of the sentence. Half of the rest of that family leaves the two words out, and the other half leaves the sentence out. So you could get 30 variant readings right here. But nobody before that point left that sentence out. This family, nobody left the sentence out at all. They've got their own problems, but nobody left that sentence out. In this family, nobody left that sentence out. So I argue, I don't mean me, but I mean people who do this, they'd say, the sentence was left out and was left out right about there. Had to be. Because all the things before it don't have it. The ones after it have a variety of reasons. They don't have it left out. They don't have it left out. Now, what if they leave out three key words? Because they're of a theological persuasion where they hate these three words. So they leave those three words out of the text. And after them, some of the people leave those three words out and some don't. But before that, you guys didn't leave them out. None of you guys leave them out. None of you guys leave them out. Ah, we know what this happened. This happened right back here with this family. That's how they put it together. So the more manuscripts you have with dates that are dated, and there's all kinds of ways to date manuscripts, the type of handwriting you use, the kind of material you put it on, where it was found, the type of ink or whatever that's used, the stuff it's wrapped in can be carbon dated. There's widespread agreement, liberal, conservative, moderate, on where these mistakes are. So the bare fact that there's 200,000 variant readings means almost nothing. Long explanation, but that's why large numbers are good, because in that sense, great quantity translates to great quality, if that makes sense.
I just wondered, because then if somebody starts leaving sentences out, it's going to say, well, people are going to say, well, then there's mistakes in there because they started to leave the sentences
right
out.
But remember my rules. Well, I already erased them. Early is better, right?
Yes.
And nobody across all three families, nobody left this sentence out early. They started doing it back there or way back there. Uh-huh. So early is better, and that's why people agree. You can take every variant reading in the New Testament. Like I said, the bad news is that there's 200,000. The good news is we know where they are. And because we know where they are, you can apply these rules and come up with a reading. No variant reading affects a single matter of theology in the New Testament. No doctrine changes based on what you do with this variant reading. That's how rich the New Testament tradition is in text.
For more information about the Veritas Forum, including additional recordings and a calendar of upcoming events, please visit our website at www.veritas.org.